This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Greetings, and welcome to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, also known as the Food Healer, and I'm excited about a show we've got today. I've been wanting to do this for a long time, and I finally have found the right person to do this with. So I'm going to be interviewing Miriam Chisholm, who's a vegan and animal rights activist, all about what she does and about veganism and all that stuff. So we're talking about the animals today. Miriam, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk to me. I really appreciate it.
And
I'm really excited to learn about what you do, because I know you've been doing this for years, but I really don't know what you do when you do it. And so I think it would be cool to talk about everything and just enlighten people as to what your purpose is and goal and all that good stuff. So can we just jump in?
I'm sorry, what was that last part?
Can we just jump in and get started?
Oh, of course. Let's
Yay.
Do it.
Okay, so you do animal activism. Can you describe what that is?
Well, animal rights activism is basically the act of standing up and speaking out for animals, because most people don't really consider who is on their plate or who they're wearing or who suffered in a lab for that shampoo they use. So animals are used with no regard for their feelings or ability to suffer, when in reality they suffer just like we do, humans. And that alone, I feel, should make people to stop wanting to contribute to their suffering.
I mean, I really, really like and respect that angle, because I think that that's one that really hits home, and it's a little bit unusual. Usually, you know, you're the first person that I've spoken to regarding this that animals are sentient beings. You know, usually it's just kind of like numbers, like, you know, if you don't eat meat, this will be, you know, this many less cattle will be slaughtered. But to really, just that one sentence or two sentences that you just said just totally made this so much more, I think, accessible for people to realize that these are, I mean, they're not human beings, but these are, you know, beings that think and feel and do all that kind of stuff.
Correct. Yeah, they want to live just like we do. They just want to live in peace.
God, wouldn't that be great, you know?
It would.
So how long have you been doing this?
I've been doing the activism for a little over 4 years.
Wow. And what got you into it?
Well, I became vegan about a year before that.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, I felt like I needed to do more for the animals, because they really need all the help they can get.
Yeah, it's true. And so, When you're working with animals, are you specializing in certain ones, or is it kind of like anyone that needs help at that moment?
Just at that moment, whoever needs help, whatever event comes up, we try to get to that.
And okay, I'm dying to know more about this big time. I saw that you guys were, I guess, in New Jersey regarding bear hunting.
Yes.
Can you talk to us about that?
Yes. The bear hunting protest in New Jersey, it was for 1 week. It was bow hunting, and then I think they call it black powder. It's basically like musket shooting.
Oh, my God.
And that's in October. That was at the beginning of October. New Jersey had a ban on bear hunting for many years. And then Governor Christie came in and said, hey, go ahead and kill all the black bears.
Great.
So I think it was about 7 years ago that he came into office and allowed bear hunting again. And in New Jersey, they allow baiting before the hunt. So hunters go out and smear peanut butter and donuts and all kinds of goodies, and they bait the bears.
Oh, come on.
They keep coming back to the same spot. So on the first day of hunt, they're right there, and they just shoot them.
Oh, God.
They're allowed to shoot cubs. They're allowed to shoot mothers.
Jesus.
It's really sad, really sad.
And what are they doing with the bears, do you know?
Well, some of them claim that they eat them, mm-hmm. but maybe some of them do, but I've talked to the wife of a hunter who had eaten bear, and he said it was not good, mm-hmm. and it's very tough meat.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a hunter who basically hunts deer.
Okay.
So, you know, I think most bear hunting is trophy hunting.
Makes sense. It makes, you know what I mean? It makes a lot more sense just because of, like, the bear heads and the bear skin rugs and all this. And I mean,
right.
That's the kind of hunting that makes me the most crazy. I mean, I'm not pro hunting, but like the ones that aren't even utilizing the animal, it's like, are you kidding me? It's like, oh,
yeah.
So now you have this like cool thing on your wall. I hope you're proud of yourself, you know?
Yeah.
I'm blown away about the cub thing. So, I mean, like, okay. How dangerous is a black bear? Do you have any idea?
They actually are very shy. They will avoid you at all costs. Black bear will have their cubs go up a tree. It's the grizzlies, I believe, that if you get between a cub and the mother, mm-hmm. she will attack you. But mm-hmm. black bears are not like that at all. And there are so many non-lethal methods that they could use. You know, they claim it's overpopulation, so... Mm-hmm. They're managing the population by killing them. But they really just need to learn how to live with the bears.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that that's a huge justification for a lot of hunting is it's like, well, we need to, you know, control the population because a lot of deer hunters, it's like, oh my God, there's so many deers, you know, and they're eating my crops and they're eating my trees and they're eating all this. And it's like, nobody ever seems to bring into account the fact that we're building and taking over their areas like crazy. So they have less
exactly.
and less places to hang out.
We're taking over their habitat. So
yeah.
Where are they supposed to go?
Yeah. And then I guess they're just supposed to hide the whole time and, you know, not appear anywhere at any time. I mean...
Right.
And it's also like this level of fear that goes into it. You know what I mean? Of like, oh my God, bear! You know, and immediately it's like flashing to some B-movie reel of like, you know, crazy pants bear, kill someone. And, you know, nobody ever hears the backstory on these things.
Right, right. I mean, black bears are, they will avoid you at all costs.
I mean, I've never seen one, and I spent 7 years, you know, upstate in the woods quite often, and I mean, I never saw it. I maybe saw like the butt of one, like 200 yards away, kind of thing. But it was never like, oh my God, there's a bear in the front yard.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. If they hear you coming, they'll tear ass and go.
Yeah, I don't blame them. I mean, well, hell, if that's what we're doing to them, I would too. You know, oh my God, it's so crazy. And so, regarding the meat industry. Because I know you've done a lot of research. I know you do a lot with this, too. What are some things about that you think the average person has absolutely no concept of what's going on in the meat industry?
Good question. So I think a lot of people probably don't know that the agricultural industry, the meat industry,
mm-hmm.
is the largest contributor to climate change, even more than all forms of transportation put together.
Are you serious?
I'm totally serious.
Wow.
If anyone's interested in learning more about that, they can watch the documentary Cowspiracy. So basically, it's the premise is CO2 from the burning of fossil fuels
uh-huh.
takes 100 years to remove from the atmosphere, whereas methane, which is produced from ruminant animals like
yeah.
cows,
yeah.
that takes only 10 years to remove from
really?
The atmosphere. So... Right now, nearly half of all greenhouse gases comes from animal agriculture.
Wow.
There's a lot of cows out there.
Wow.
Yeah. And then another thing I think people don't realize, and it's really sad, you know, we do the activism for the animals, but it's also for humans
mm-hmm.
because... Get this. So in places like North Carolina,
uh-huh.
where they have the really huge pig and chicken factory farm.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
they have literally, they have lagoons the size of 4 football fields full of waste from the animals. Feces, urine, blood, rotting body parts.
Oh, my God.
And to prevent the lagoons from overflowing, because where is all the waste going to go, right?
Yeah,
it goes into the lagoon. But when it gets to a certain point, the factory farm sprays, I can't even believe this, they spray the waste into the air.
Like what? Are you kidding?
You know, like, you look like you're watering the lawn. They spray the waste into the air. It ends up seeping into the ground.
Ew.
Into the groundwater. And also, the wind carries the droplets of waste, and the nearby residents breathe it in.
Oh, my God.
This contaminated air, and people are getting sick and dying. And, of course, this always happens in lower-income areas.
Of course.
Where mostly people of color are greatly affected.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, it's not about just the animals.
Yeah.
It's humans, too.
Well, I mean, I think that's a really important fact, too, because, you know, a lot of people are like, whatever, screw animals. And it's like, wait, it's going to affect me? It's like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, not to mention your health. eating vegan is so much healthier for you.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's one of the things, too, is, you know, dealing with the modern American diet is... I mean, so many people are so nutrient-starved because it's either a fast food or a meat-based diet. Like, and I'm talking, like, primarily meat. I'm talking about someone who has, like, a bacon, egg, and cheese in the morning, and then at lunch they go and have, like, some kind of meat sandwich, you know, and then at dinner they have, like, a roast chicken with their family. Like, there's so much meat involved in our diets that it's like, I mean, there's even, like, which blows my mind, like, meat, oh, my God, I guess they're almost like meat power bars now. You know, and it's like, I saw one recently and I was like, you're really going to eat meat that comes out of a package like this? Are you kidding me? And it's like soft and it had cranberries in it. It's like, ew, are you kidding me? So,
yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. I think that it's, you know, I absolutely agree with you that we are absolutely overeating meat, and it's the factory farms are the ones that kill me, because I mean, I've driven by, I don't remember who it was, but it was a chicken producer off of 95 in the Carolinas. And let me tell you, on a sunny day, that the smell.
Oh, disgusting.
I don't understand how people don't protest and close these things down, because, I mean, it was like, you know, it was like, oh, my God, what is that? Roll up the windows. Turn on the AC. Oh, my God, it's worse. You know, like it's, you can't get away from it.
And can you imagine having to live near that? I mean, people do.
Yeah.
You know, it's so sad.
God, it's so scary, and it's disgusting. So you guys do protests regarding the slaughterhouse industry. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so about 4 years ago, I started my own SAVE group, and that's a sister organization of Toronto Pig SAVE. So we're called New York Farm Animal SAVE. And the main purpose is to bear witness.
Mm-hmm.
And for us also to do vegan outreach and document. So we like to share the photos, the stories of these animals that we bear witness to show, you know, basically putting glass walls on slaughterhouses. So we go in front of, well, in New York City, there are no large slaughterhouses. So we go in front of live markets. They're basically smaller slaughterhouses. Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I'm sure these guys are just thrilled to see you when you guys show up every day. And, like, are you at the point where you guys all know each other? So it's like, oh, hey, there's the dude from inside kind of thing.
Well, it's funny because we go mainly to one place in Harlem.
Uh-huh.
It's on 126th Street and Amsterdam Avenue. And at first, they tried everything to stop us from sitting inside, because you can see them weighing the chicken or the bunny, and you can take pictures from outside of the animals in the cages. So they would cover the doors and windows with garbage bags and newspapers. And then after a while, you know, after a few years, they actually gave up. And then now, all of a sudden, they're really hating us again.
So oh, no.
Again, covering the doors and windows with garbage bags. I guess it's a roller coaster relationship. I don't know.
It sounds like it. And I mean, I'm assuming, do people come, like, if you, okay, you guys go and you're protesting the slaughterhouse, like, do people come up to you and be like, hey, what's going on? Like, how do you get the public to listen?
Well, we have signs that basically say, why love one but eat the other? So it has a picture of a dog and a cow or a dog and a pig, you know, and people will come up, and that's actually a really great neighborhood because people, most people there appreciate our presence.
Nice.
They like to get the information from us. You know, we have lots of brochures that we bring with us. We team up with Michelle Carrera's group, which is Chili's on Wheels. They hand out free vegan food.
Nice.
Yeah, so usually there's someone there at our vigils handing out free vegan food as well as, you know, us giving out brochures. So it's usually a pretty positive experience there.
Do you get, I mean, I'm assuming you get people that come up and just freak out on you and...
We have, yeah, of course.
There's always got to be one, you know what I mean? It's like, perfect
always.
Day, and then that person showed up and it's like,
Yeah, I mean, you have to expect it. And people tend to get really angry about food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no kidding.
If they think we're trying to take their food away from them, they get really angry.
That's funny, too. I mean, that's oh, my God. I don't even want to get started on the next thing I was going to say. But that's a total trip of just because it's like, hey, listen, you know, if you're vegan once in a while or you go eventually to vegan, that's great. It's like, you know, oh, my God, they're taking away our chickens. It's like, oh,
yeah.
Jesus, seriously?
You know, we're just trying to educate people and give them alternatives, healthy alternatives to what they're eating now, which is in that area, it's pretty much a food desert, although we did at one point go to all the grocery stores in the area, and they had a few vegan options and healthy things. So you know, it's changing.
Good.
And the area is also becoming gentrified.
Yeah.
That probably has something to do with it, too.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we need to take a quick break for station identification. However, I'm talking to Miriam Chisholm all about animal activism and veganism. So stay tuned. We'll be back in like a minute, minute and a half.
Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
And we are back. Oh my God, that was the most super awesome commercial I have ever, ever heard on the radio. Go Roberta's. I love you guys. And that's where the station is, you guys. So, like, if you come to Roberta's for a pizza, look through the glass windows, and you might see one of our hosts on the show. That just made my day. That was awesome. Anyway, I am talking to Miriam Chisholm all about animal activism and veganism. And so I got more questions for you.
Okay.
What do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions about the things that you guys protest?
Well, I would have to say the biggest misconception of everything we protest is that animals are here for humans to use and abuse, you know, whether it's for food, clothing, entertainment, or science. It's all totally unnecessary. And, you know, people just don't think about it.
Yeah.
I didn't before I was vegan. I didn't think about any of it. The leather bag that I had, the leather shoes. That was somebody's skin. You know, it's just once the thing clicks in your head, you think, wow, what am I doing?
Yeah, and especially, I mean, nowadays, even, you know, 10 years ago, even veganism was kind of like, ooh. And, I mean, at this point, I mean, it's getting, I mean, you know, there are entire cultures in this on this planet that are vegetarian, you know? So it's not like this is some radical thing, but it's something that is becoming, it's, I feel like 10, 15 years ago, if someone said anything about veganism, carnivores, like hackles would go up and be like, oh God. And I feel like there's enough now that's really come into the psyche, and carnivores being like, ooh, vegetables taste good, you know? So it's not as nearly as angry, but I guess it depends on the audience that you're talking to.
Yeah, everyone is different. Like, some people get very angry. Some people are really interested. Some people say, well, that's good for you, but I'm never going to change. But they're not mean about it. You know, everyone's so different.
Well, at least you're not getting, like, you know, screamed at constantly. I mean, how do you guys keep up your morale when you're doing this?
I would say probably having just remembering who we're doing it for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a total introvert. I really, I would rather just live in a cave and be all alone. But I force myself to go out and do vegan outreach and talk to people because it's not about me. It's about the animals. And they really, like I said before, they need all the help they can get.
Yeah, they do. And I mean, I'm blown away, actually, that an introvert would even be able to do this work, because I would feel like the first mean person or angry person would be like, you know, never mind, never mind. Like, that, it takes guts to do what you guys are doing.
Well, you know, you get used to the angry people. It's never fun, but you just have to let them say their piece and just walk away. Because, you know, you don't want to get in a fight with them. You don't want to argue with them. You're just like, okay, goodbye.
Yeah, seriously. Seriously, it's not worth it, you know, especially if somebody's coming to stir the pot when they see you guys out there. Then it's just like, oh, run, you know, there's no point in that.
No.
Ugh. Well, I want to hear all about Rudy.
Rudy. So we were at a live market vigil. I think it was July. Yeah, it was at the end of July. And it was a place we had never been before. So this was our first time there. And the owner and a couple of the workers kept coming out and talking to us, arguing with us, telling us, you know, they're here for us. Animals are here for us to eat. God said so. And we talked to them the whole time. And then at the very end of the vigil, we were actually packing up, and one of the workers came out with a chicken in his arms. And everybody ran over because they thought he was going to give him to us.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they do that out of compassion.
Oh, wow.
They will let one go. They will give one to us.
Wow.
Yeah, it's happened several times before. And so everyone ran over and they took the chicken and they were cutting the chicken. And I looked at Tony, who's my husband. He's my partner in all of this. And I said, get the crate. we started bringing, you know, a carrier, animal carrier with us just in case.
Mm-hmm.
So he ran to the car, he got the crate, he came back, and somebody put him in the crate. And then all of a sudden we hear the guy say, okay, give me the chicken back.
Oh, no!
And he was just, like, teasing us, and I don't know what his whole thing was, but everyone said exactly what you did.
No! Yes.
And then one of the activists just took that crate and ran down the street.
Oh, no way!
Got in her car, drove off.
Oh, my God.
So the first we said, oh, what should we name him? And someone said, well, we're Astoria. Let's name him Astoria. And then we decided that we would foster him until we could find a good home for him.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a little difficult to place roosters because you can only have, like, one rooster per so many hens. And, you know, it's tricky because roosters can fight with each other, you know, all that testosterone and stuff.
Seriously.
So, we said we would foster him until we found a good home for him. And I kept calling him Roo for rooster.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, oh, why don't we call him Rudy, like R-O-O-D-Y.
Cute.
And so he actually was here for almost 3 months.
Wow.
The sweetest, he's the sweetest chicken. I mean, I was, you know, I liked chickens before.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel a bond with them.
Mm-hmm.
But after having him in our home for 3 months, I really came to appreciate chickens more. They're very smart. They have personalities. And he happened to be super, super sweet.
That's
never
so funny.
Pecked us, nothing.
Really? That's impressive. So why did he live with you guys?
Why did he live with us?
Yeah.
Well, we were trying to find a home for him. Mm-hmm. And then a friend of ours who has a micro sanctuary with chickens, she said she could take him, but they weren't ready. They didn't have enough space. Mm. And she's actually one of the founders of the Veg Fest, the Hudson Valley Veg Fest.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So she was so busy right before, she couldn't take on any more chickens. So we said, okay, no problem. We'll hold on to him until after Veg Fest, mm-hmm. until, you know, everything calms down. So that's what we did. And he actually just went. We took him over there last Sunday.
Oh.
He's so happy there. And it's, I mean, we're so happy for him. He has this huge yard.
Oh, my God.
To free range in, and he's got chickens. Friends, you know, I don't know if they're actually integrated yet, but,
yeah.
You know, he can see other chickens, he can hear them, and he's got company. It's so great.
And so I would assume this is probably the first time this chicken's ever really had fresh air or, like, stepped on grass and that kind of thing.
Yeah, the first time was when he was with us. You know, we bought a couple of those dog pens, and we made a little area for him outside,
mm-hmm.
and then at night he would, and during the day when we were at work, he would be inside in a big, huge crate.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, whenever we could, we would put him outside so he can be on grass and dirt.
This is like the luckiest bird in the world. I mean,
one
seriously.
Of the lucky ones, yeah.
It gives me hope when you say these things. I mean, there's a slaughterhouse by me, and there's about probably once or twice a year, a chicken breaks and is out. And is like running down Columbia Street, and everybody's like, yay, you know. And there used to be a girl who had backyard chickens in one of the public gardens nearby. And the roosters or whoever was, you know, the escapee would always wind up with them. Like they could sort of get the scent or what have you. And so like this friend of mine whose chickens they belong to, who's actually on the show talking about backyard chickens, was like, you know, I'd go in the morning and do a head count, and I have three chickens and there are four birds. And it's like, wait a minute. You know, they would just somehow figure out, like, it's safe over here. They like us. You know, and that's a smart animal. That takes reasoning and, like, you know, problem solving and logic and things like that.
Yeah, they really are smart. I mean, people don't give them enough credit.
No, but I mean, it's a lot easier to kill something that's like, oh, they're just stupid. You know what I mean? And no personality. It's like the minute there's a personality thrown onto it, I think is a problem. It becomes, that's when it's like, oh God, I'm killing something.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Or if it's horrible either way, but it's kind of like, I don't know. I mean, I think it's really cool that you were able to like spend some time with this rooster and see what birds, like what these kind of birds are like, you know?
Yeah, it was a great opportunity for us. Great learning experience.
Here's something that I really, really want to ask you, because, and I know you're going to laugh, but I wanted to ask you because I know there are a lot of people that are going to be skeptical about this. So is what you and your organization do, are you guys getting paid to do this?
No. It's all volunteer. I wish we could get paid so I could quit my job and just do protests, but nobody's going to pay us to do that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And yes, I have a full-time job.
Yes, she does. So that's important, too. And I mean, this is the type of thing, too. It's so interesting because it's like, whenever it's a group of somebody that are working together or trying to do something, I mean, have you guys been called like a cult and stuff like this just because people are lacking in drawing straws and trying to think of like mean things to say to you guys?
I don't think anyone's ever called this a cult per se, but I mean, as a joke, someone at work called me the cult leader, but that's just a joke, I think.
So give me from you, okay, what are your favorite three simple things that anybody that's listening can do to help animals and help save them?
Well, I guess one would be stop eating meat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how simple that is. For me, it was simple. Stop consuming dairy products.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the third would have to be adopt animals instead of going to breeders.
Totally.
Yeah.
I'm with you on all three of those. I think that they're all, you know, they all make sense. And it's the type of thing, like, there's so many causes out there right now. And there's so many battles to fight. And I got to tell you, I really, really respect you and your crew for just being there and just doing this. And, you know, over and over and over. And I'm honored to know you, honestly. I think that your guys' drive is something that's really, really impressive. And I love the fact that people are starting to listen to you guys and pay more attention to what's going on, because that's, you know, you need to know what's on your plate.
Right. Who's on your plate?
God, that really, I tell you, just twisted it all for me by saying it that way. Thanks. I love it. And We're almost out of time, sadly, because I really like this topic a lot, and I think it's really important. When you have people coming up to you and like, where can I learn more? What do you think are some simple websites for, like, really basic stuff? And then what's your favorite website?
I tell them, well, you know, sadly, our website is down right now.
Mm.
So I actually point them to TorontoPigSave.org.
Okay.
Because that's where really it all started for us anyway. And also ClimateVegan.org.
Ooh, I don't know that one.
Yeah, it's really interesting. That talks about the climate and how, you know, animal agriculture is like 50% of the problem. I would say those two websites, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a million, you know, documentaries out there. Earthlings, that's a hard one to watch.
I haven't seen that one.
But if someone has the guts to watch it, they really should. And then a new documentary, which is really good, is What the Health?
Oh, I don't know that one.
Yeah, that one's really, really good. It's about, it talks about veganism and your health.
Cool.
And then Cowspiracy is the other really good one.
Okay, so Miriam knows me. We haven't seen each other in a while, but she knows me, and she knows that I am, like, the biggest chicken and the most squeamish human being on the planet. So for someone like me that, like, has a really low threshold for, like, really freaky things, what would you recommend I watch or people like me watch, or kids even?
Fork, Silver, Knives is a good one. And the two that I mentioned, What the Health and Cowspiracy, there's really nothing horrible in those.
Okay.
Well, in Cowspiracy, at the end, I think you see a duck getting slaughtered. But that's the only thing.
Okay. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Merritt, thank you so much. Thank you. I think that what you're doing is great. I think what you guys are doing is great. I admire the amount of energy that you put into this. And I love the fact that you guys are going by approaching this through education, because I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate you reaching out to me. Thank you so much.
Oh, my God, thank you. And I hope to see you soon. And
hope so.
I know. And for everybody else, tomorrow's Halloween. Ooh. So I hope you all get your good spooky costumes on and you're ready to do it. I will be back next week with a brand new episode of Animal Instinct. Until then, take care.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.